Mary was telling you of the houses and the intricate carvings on the walls. These are sometimes portraits, sometimes a complete story, sometimes a picture of the landscape outside. All done with great delicacy and expressing much beauty, as our artists feel the influence of beauty on the mind. Our climate is different from yours. We do not have the violence of nature such as you know, for everything there, material or spiritual, expresses order and symmetry. We have electricity, but it is created for our use by scientists, and does not run wild as with you in thunderstorms. I cannot express myself as I wish, but I can say that our manufactures include all forms of clothing for protection and adornment, made from fibers of various plants. We have no leather from animals, but use a composition designed by scientists. For choicer articles of ornamentation we make use of the precious metals as you do. I wish you could see all the beautiful things that fill our homes. I am at a loss for words to tell you of them. We have much literature and fine libraries. In place of newspapers, the news is distributed by electricity and posted in public places. But such news is all of peaceful character, having to do with the daily lives and industries of the people. In the home life, people are drawn together by mutual sympathies and tastes, and divorces are unknown. And under such circumstances the children develop fine and intelligent characters. I suppose you think this is monotonously good. If so, it is because of my lack of power to describe. Pleasures are of so many kinds and industries so varied and the love of learning so universal, that monotony is unknown. Mary then took up the pencil and continued the message. Other planets are also inhabited by people formed as we are, although quite different in appearance. On Venus they do not live to what we call old age. I do not mean that they never grow old, but that they mature in a shorter time. As their years are shorter than ours, they live as many as we do, but not so long a time. Far from being behind us in civilization, they are much superior. They have all the best things we have and many more. They have finer organized brains, and the manner of life there creates greater development. The people are better looking than those of Earth, and are more intelligent and more inventive. The heat on Venus is much greater than on Earth, and life would be difficult if not for cooling devices. Cities there are built with many covered highways, and air forced through them by electric power. This power is created by new methods, which I am not allowed to explain. Life is far older and more advanced than on Earth, but in some things they are yet quite deficient. In astronomy they are little interested. They are too near the sun for good observation. Venus has more moons than have been discovered from the Earth, because the light from the sun interferes. There are many little asteroids revolving about the planet, too small to be seen from Earth. But they create light at night and furnish one reason for the indifference to astronomy. The inhabitants of all worlds are of the same general form, but different as conditions differ. On Mars and Venus they are similar to Earth people, except the Martians are larger and those of Venus smaller. Venus revolves around the Sun as the Earth does, giving the same changes of season. The surrounding atmosphere is very dense, furnishing some protection from too great heat. Many inventions exist to temper the heat, but the people are inured to the high temperatures by long habit and are rarely overcome by it. Venus is densely inhabited, and the occupants vary as on Earth. On Mars, disease is almost unknown, their passing into the spiritual life is painless and without fear. Venus also has less disease than have Earth people, for there is less of the material and more of the spiritual, and it is the spirit that makes for health. 25. Reincarnation. The question of progress after the close of the material life, and, especially, continued progress throughout eternity, is a stumbling block for many in their search for truth. The old idea of complete knowledge and perfection of character for the select few who would be privileged to walk the golden streets, still clings with many, together with the idea that those who miss this happiness must spend eternity in some other place. Some believe that we are allowed another chance in a second existence on Earth. If one admits the possibility of continued progress, it is difficult to comprehend an eternity of it without reaching perfection. So, it seems, we have then three chances: an immediate perfection, a perfection reached through reincarnation, or else perfection through continued progress, a similar result in either hypothesis. But perfection is the Buddhistic idea of nirvana, a conception very unsatisfying to many. In these communications we are taught so earnestly that personality persists throughout eternity, that there seems to follow of necessity a different conception of perfection, not a perfection of one, but a perfection of many parts that make a whole. This is illustrated very effectively in a presentation of the case that I read not long ago. This illustration compared the perfected whole with a complete orchestra, in which the differentiation and increased ability of each 200 reincarnation 201 performer reached its highest attainment when each contributed most harmoniously toward the perfection of the ensemble. Thus the expression in the chapter on progress, always acquiring and always giving out, would mean when applied to the orchestra, always improving the performance of each instrument, but always in a manner that most suitably adds to the general result. The more complete the individuality of each in relation to the whole, the more perfect is the whole. If one accepts the ideas of continued progress and persistence of individuality, there is then no need for the theory of reincarnation, which, after all, is only a theory, and the quotations given below carry much force. In a number of books which offer records of spirit communication, the theory of reincarnation is fully set forth. We were reading one of these in which the opinions of the one speaking were quite positively expressed. It did not satisfy us, and we turned to Mary for explanation. She asked who was sending the messages. We gave her the name and she replied, "I will send a messenger to find him and have him come to this circle if possible." After a little while she continued, "He is here and wishes to speak. He wishes to state his own ideas on certain subjects and we have promised to let him have his say." Then the following was written, "I have indited several books from here, most of which are true, as I see the truth. Your instructor believes differently, so I will tell you my position. I believe in reincarnation, and I believe in evil as a living entity." [Footnote: The evil go down inevitably, and as they progress in wickedness the possibility of becoming angelic decreases as a matter of course. There is no hope for them but to become reincarnated and start over again. The writing was interrupted at this point, but another evening it was resumed. "I am a believer in reincarnation, and in the philosophy of the Eastern adepts. They are from birth more occult than the Western world and nearer the unseen truths of life, both here and there. They believe that when a soul departs from the body it either ascends or descends according to its life on the earth plane. When it ascends it goes upward into that state of highest incomprehensible bliss called nirvana, or, it descends until the whole being becomes so evil that nothing but rebirth can start it upward again. It may reappear in the form of an animal and have all the upward weight to travel over again. But it has the chance at least, of becoming a pure spirit, and so of reaching nirvana at last." The writing stopped and we asked, "Then only evil is reincarnated?" Mary replied, "He is gone, but we think that is his belief." Then she continued, "He is strongly hypnotized by his earthly studies and beliefs, and it may be long before he comes out of them. But he will drop these ideas sometime. His belief in nirvana is the most dreary part of it, an endless inactivity of contemplating one's own bliss. The reincarnation of the evil ones is not so bad in principle, although we here cannot see how the soul can go back to animal life again, having once been human." Then she added so emphatically the pencil nearly tore the paper, "Our teachers from the higher planes say nothing of the kind ever happens." Our various readings brought up the subject several times and Mary started further, "Many spirits here keep their belief in reincarnation for a time, and send back messages to the world stating this belief. But there is no such thing as physical reincarnation. Once a spirit, always a spirit. The progress goes on from here instead of beginning all over again in some earthly career. Some get confused in trying to tell of the intelligence that may return to Earth to help others, just as our knowledge of this life is returning to help you. Also, a few great leaders are allowed to impress their greatness upon such minds there as can receive. But try to understand rebirth as a progression only, and from that further height sending greater truths to earth. Philosophers here often carry their theories too far, just as some do on earth. That is one of the things people must learn before trusting spirit messages too completely. She re-expressed this again. Many here express reincarnation as a bodily rebirth, whereas it is only a mental or a spiritual influence that returns and often surrounds a loved one there, or often enlarges the genius, or makes the wisdom higher and finer. Influence from here is constantly going earthward, but it is wrongly stated by those who believe in physical rebirth. There is no such thing, the higher teachers tell us. And surely, progress on this side is far easier than the blundering of earthly lives, no matter how often repeated. We have not believed in it, but there seem to be some otherwise fine teachers there who teach reincarnation. Do not let that worry you. Knowledge is not centered in any one teacher only. I would, of course, accept the divine teachings of Christ, or the high wisdom coming from the Most High. Again, the subject was mentioned when we asked, is space infinite? The space called heaven has no confines, neither has creation any end. The creative power is infinite. Mind does not stop and stagnate nor lose its power of progression. Many finite minds are puzzled over the thought of eternal progression, and have fallen back on the resort to reincarnation, that is, a time of silence, and a beginning over again of a mortal life. But this is not so. We progress from plane to plane and sphere to sphere. But the mind must be in touch with infinity to realize what eternal progression and eternal occupation mean. It is quite common for the writing to begin like the following. But this about reincarnation came as an entire surprise, as we had not even been thinking of the subject for some time. Mary and Dee are here. What do you wish? Have you anything you wish to say to us first? We are not very talkative tonight. We have just been in a circle where talking seemed out of date, where we felt the silence almost oppressive. We have been in a circle where they seem possessed with the reincarnation idea, and each was trying to look backward to his other former incarnations. We had no former incarnations to study, so silence was our only act. Did you learn anything that you can tell us, especially how they came to believe it? Mary thinks it logical enough. They cannot comprehend an unending life unless it culminates in nirvana. And so they grasp the idea of returning circles or cycles of life on earth, a new experience each time. And this may go on indefinitely, especially in the case of wicked ones who expiate their sins by becoming animals and evolving upward through the slow-moving centuries. Do they not progress enough to hear your teachers? No, that is the trouble. They become absorbed in the one idea and may keep it for uncounted years. If we have had no former spirit life, how did we begin? Is it simply by a splitting off from parent life analogous to the physical beginning? I know of nothing more than that. The individual life begins with the birth of the individual, and the human being has the capacity for spirit life and the development into immortal existence. I have never studied all the philosophy or psychology of the subject. To tell the truth, it has never interested me. I love this life, I feel the upward longing, I am sure that I will progress from here and not return to the old dismal earth, so that my longings have never led me into the study of the possibilities of prenatal existence. It does not seem to me worthwhile. The reincarnationists have no proof except in their own imaginations. 26. Spiritualism and the Bible. Among those who disapprove of any attempt to fathom the mysteries of the unseen life, the ministers of the gospel are perhaps the most earnest in counseling their followers to avoid the entire subject. They hear of mysterious seances, of fraudulent mediums, of weak minds tottering over into insanity, and the whole subject seems to them bound up in deceit, fraud, and the vain imaginings of the subliminal mind. Yet they lose sight of the fact that the Bible itself is a repository of psychic experiences, and they seem to forget that good and evil have strangely intermingled since the world began. Superstition, false doctrines and fearful cruelty, as in the days of inquisitorial practice, having many times invaded the church itself. Through long ages it has been the effort of spiritual teachers to discern the truth, to separate it from the false, and to draw nearer and ever nearer the divine and absolute knowledge. Shall we not accord the same patience and discernment to a subject which surely is of supreme importance? Charles Elfdale, an English vicar, has been so impressed with the importance of supernormal revelation, and, through his work among all sorts and conditions of men, so impressed with the conviction that a more intense and vital belief in the reality of life after death is one of the urgent needs of the times, that he has published a book, giving, first of all, the scriptural proofs of resurrection, and adding to these, psychic experiences of his own and of many acquaintances. A careful study of the Bible, he declares, reveals a record of almost continuous supernormal experiences, and these experiences he has taken pains to classify under their proper heads, as clairvoyance, levitation, strange sounds and supernormal lights, appearances of spirit hands and the touch of discarnate beings, automatic writing, sounds of music and other manifestations. All are very similar to the psychical experiences of today. I would like to add, a little more in detail, a few of the New Testament examples that are very indicative of the good that came to the early disciples through spiritual guidance. One instance occurs after the stoning and martyrdom of Stephen, and the bitter persecutions of the Christians immediately following. So great was this persecution that the disciples scattered, and one of them, Philip, went down to the city of Samaria to preach. While there, an angel of the Lord spake unto Philip, saying, Arise, go towards the south unto the way that goeth down from Jerusalem unto Gaza, which is desert, explicit directions, which Philip obeyed. And far out on this highway he saw a chariot, and in the chariot sat a trusted official of Queen Candace, the queen of the Ethiopians. A trusted official indeed, for he had charge of all the queen's treasure. He was returning from Jerusalem, and, resting in his chariot, was reading from one of the prophets. And again Philip became clairaudient and heard the words, Go near and join thyself to this chariot. Philip obeyed the voice, and then occurred the conversation with the Ethiopian that ended in his conversion and baptism. Perhaps more important yet is the incident told in the 10th chapter of Acts, in which a Roman centurion became both clairaudient and clairvoyant. This centurion saw in a vision an angel of God, in another place described as a man in bright clothing, who said to Cornelius, Send men to Joppa and call for one Simon whose surname is Peter. He lodgeth with one Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the seaside, he shall tell thee what thou oughtest to do. Again explicit directions. And Cornelius called two of his house servants and a devout soldier of them that waited upon him continually, in other words one of his bodyguard, and sent them to Joppa. But how was this message of Cornelius, a Roman soldier, to be received by Peter, a Jew, to whom it was unlawful, being a Jew, to fraternize with, or to visit one of another nation? How indeed, except through a heavenly command that was higher and more compelling than Jewish law? For Peter was on the housetop of this seaside home of Simon, the tanner, and while there he fell into a trance. These are the words, he fell into a trance, and saw, as it were, a great sheet, knit at the four corners, and let down to earth, wherein were all manner of four-footed things and creeping things and fowls of the air. And Peter heard, clairaudiently, the words, Rise, Peter, kill and eat. But Peter objected, saying, I have never eaten anything common nor unclean. Then the voice said, What God hath cleansed, that call not thou common. Then Peter wondered what the vision could mean, and as he wondered, the messengers from the Roman, Cornelius, arrived, and as they waited for Peter below, once more Peter heard the voice, Behold, three men seek thee. Go with them, for I have sent them. Thus through spirit guidance, through vision and voice, began Peter's ministry to the Gentiles. And the power of that vision is present today, for we are Gentiles. Saul, afterwards called Paul, a spectator at the stoning of Stephen, and he himself breathing out threatening and slaughter against the Christians, went to the high priest for letters to the synagogues of Damascus, so that if he found any of the hated sect on the way, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem, then started on his way to Damascus. And on the way, suddenly a great light shone around him and a voice said, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? I'm Jesus whom thou persecutest. And instantly the whole inner nature of the man changed, and, blinded by the vision, he was led to Damascus. In Damascus was a devout man who by both vision and voice, was commanded to heal Paul of his blindness. No wonder that this disciple hesitated, because of the evil Paul had done to the Christians in Jerusalem, and a second time the command came. Then he obeyed, and Paul received his sight. And this former ruthless, cruel enemy of Christianity became, to use his own words, obedient to the heavenly vision, and from that time on became the apostle, philosopher, orator, skillful expounder and defender of the Christian religion. In his ministry, led by voice and vision, he was forbidden to preach the word in Asia, not allowed to go into Bithynia, yet called over to Macedonia to help, in Corinth told by heavenly voice, "Be not afraid, but speak and hold not thy peace," and in that wonderful shipwreck off Malta, heard the cheering words of the angel who appeared to him, saying, "Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and God hath given thee all them that sail with thee." Later, to the people of Corinth, Paul said, "I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord, and tells of a man in Christ, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth, caught up unto paradise, and heard unspeakable words which it is not lawful for a man to tell." And to the Hebrews, he speaks of their being compassed about by so great a cloud of witnesses, and again later, he exclaims, "Are they not all ministering spirits, sent forth to minister to those who shall be heirs of salvation?" Was it not through this inspiration of vision and voice that the early Christians were so strengthened that they could endure the terrible privations and persecutions of that time? Is it not possible that vision and voice may in these later days strengthen those who are working for that new day when justice and kindness shall prevail, and all nations at last be brought together in the bond of brotherhood? Is it not possible, as one has suggested, that the second coming of Christ may mean, not that Christ shall descend into the material, but we ascend into the spiritual? We were speaking of the Bible one evening and Mary said, "The essential parts of the Bible are the ethical teachings and the sacred example of the Christ. The earth needed Christ, and he came. The earth still needs him, and his influence is still here. But many are deaf and blind to this influence, and because this is so, war still desolates the earth and selfishness and crime sometimes blot out the law of unselfishness and love that he gave his life to teach." We asked if Christ was near to those on that plain. Christ is exalted to the heavens above, but he is as the elder brother and the guide of us all on this plane. As you advance in knowledge of this life, we can tell you more of its mystery and loveliness. How can we advance, conquer doubt, build up hope, believe and the infinite love, the cruelties of this world and the sufferings of the innocent, make it hard sometimes to believe that the world is ruled by infinite love, believe in God's mercy through it all. The suffering of the innocent is more than made up to them here. The pure in heart have a vision of a purified world where kindness and justice shall reign. They are the hope of the world, and through them we must reach those whose thoughts are all for self and for selfish interests. The hope for the future lies in the philosophy that Christ brought to earth and which here is our rule of life. Christ was the apostle of love and patience, and he desired to deliver the world from evil through the power of love. But evil held sway by reason of its long continuance and growth, and was too strong, as it has many times since been too strong, to be overcome by spiritual power. But the time is coming when the Christ love will prevail, and wisdom and love together shall rule the world. One Christmas we asked for a Christmas thought, and the pencil wrote, "We know that you are remembering the birth of Christ on this day, and we believe that both birth and death should be remembered sacredly and reverently, but the life is more to humanity than either. The world should concentrate its thought more on his life with its wonderful wisdom and love." 27. Miscellaneous. Some information has been received on a number of subjects that are difficult to classify under other headings. The following probably include the most important statements. Are angels different from other spirits? The spirits of mortals are different from the angelic host. The angels are more perfected, and belong to a higher organism than we at present have. You may call it a higher form, a more progressive state. Many higher forms already exist, and many more are progressing. Consider the eternal progression that is going on in every planet, and how essential the higher forms of life are there, to forward that progression. The angels were once mortal, some on Earth, some on other planets. But the many years of their spiritual life in the celestial world have given them a wisdom and knowledge and perfection of character, that we of the lower planes have not yet achieved. Therefore we do not speak of ourselves as angels, only as spirits moving along the upward way. Angels are not connected with earth-bound spirits as we are. They are moving to other and higher studies and activities. Mary has preferred to stay here, and many are like her. We find abundant opportunities for service here. We are attracted to the planet we came from, and prefer to stay near it for a time. We inquired concerning two who went over as infants, and were told, they are not pure spirits yet, for then they would belong to the angelic host. They came as infants, but they possessed the immortal spirit, and they differ only in the fact that they have never known sin nor earthly life, material life I should say. What do you have that they do not? We have the knowledge of good and evil, and the power of choice, and the education through this to help others who are still in a world of good and evil. But there are many other ways in which they can serve. These infant spirits are infants no longer, for they have been there many years. They wrote one evening, we think it interesting to watch these messages to and fro. Can you give us a thought from Earth now? I don't know that this should have surprised us, but it did. We all at once realized that they knew nothing of Earth or material things by experience any more than we knew spirit life by experience. Sis asked if they could not see material things. They are untrained in that respect. What they would like to know is how you manage to live with all those earthly impediments they hear about. I asked if they had ever been brought in contact with evil on that side. Not much. They could not become teachers, for they have no earthly experience. Their work is along other lines. They are trying hard to understand Earth life, but many of its phases seem unbelievable to them. The crime and cruelty they only know by descriptions, but they look at it as an almost unbelievable fiction. They do not fully realize it any more than you fully realize this life. They have been taught and believe it as you believe some faraway facts of ancient history. Perhaps that is not a good comparison either, for you have at least some other earthly happenings to compare it with. But they have not, so it is hard for them to understand. Many months later we were talking with them again and the following was written, we are learning the Earth language and often listen to the conversations between you and the circle. It seems very wonderful to us, very wonderful that people on Earth are willing to live in the midst of such sin, misery, sickness, ignorance, and poverty, and all the other ills we hear you describe. Do you not see the ignorant and criminal ones who come over there? We are not really in touch with them, for we do not try to influence the earth-born mortals when they first come over. Our work with them is afterward in trying to help them to the various occupations here. You seem to come together, are you together all the time? Mary says, they came over so young that they received most of their education together and they grew into a companionship that has become a habit as well as a joy. They are alike in temperament, so that naturally they grew into intimate companionship. I asked if such infants reached maturity earlier than here. Yes, because they learn more rapidly. One of them came over several years before the other, as you know. He was far more mature than if he had remained on Earth for that time. He met his little brother and was his helper for a long time, and his father taught him to love the family tie wherever congeniality existed. Then they took up studies together because both were interested in the same things. Having no sin nor selfishness to overcome, I should have thought they would be on a higher plane by this time. They could go at any time, and they are connected with circles who are studying higher things, but their father preferred to remain near the earth plane, and they have loved him and stayed with him. How does the earth appear to them? Mary says, they look upon it as a mystery and, will you listen to them? We are not able to comprehend many things. We hear of the mechanical devices there and wonder much about them. We move in a flash of time. You are studying ways of getting about upon the surface of the earth, in the air, on the water, or maybe under the water. We have heard of your submarines and airplanes, automobiles and railroad trains. It all seems so slow, so difficult, so unnecessary. How do you ever find time to move from one place to another?